Today on Word of Mouth, spying on hashtags. A U.S. intel program aims to get out ahead of social and political unrest by monitoring chatter on Twitter. And our technology oracle predicts Apple's next move. Think giant iPad in your living room. Plus Chuck Palahniuk, the author of Fight Club, is known for his subversive style and maladjusted characters. His newest novel, Damned, is about a plucky, overprivileged 13-year-old girl who lands in hell. We'll talk with Chuck Palahniuk about hell imagined, lived, and escaped. But first, the magnitude 5.8 earthquake that rattled the East Coast back in August also triggered speculation about whether the controversial gas drilling technique called fracking may have been responsible. Fracking involves drilling into shale thousands of feet below the Earth's surface, then fracturing the Earth by pumping millions of gallons of sand, water, and chemicals into the shale to release natural gas. So far, contamination of groundwater supplies has been the focus of those opposing Big Energy's push to expand fracking. Now, evidence is mounting of a connection between fracking and unusual seismic activity the world over. Mark Fischetti is senior editor at Scientific American Magazine, who oversees the magazine's energy, environment, and sustainability coverage. He's been tracking fracking for more than a year. Mark, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Hi, thanks.
News broke earlier this month that a UK energy firm found a probable connection between fracking and two earthquakes there earlier this year. What did the report say, and how convincing is that evidence?
Yeah, this was in a place called Blackpool in northwest England. There were tremors that were felt and recorded, and the drilling firm there essentially said that they agreed that the fracking they were conducting were likely to have caused those tremors. The two caveats are that the tremors were very small, 2.3 on the Richter scale or smaller, which is almost hard to feel yourself. And they were drilling only a few kilometers underground, whereas most fracking operations are a lot deeper.
So tremors were small. Report reaction small? I mean, any response at all from the energy industry?
Not a lot. I would say, though, that there's been a correlation between geothermal energy, deep geothermal, and they call it enhanced geothermal energy, where they pump water way down into rock in order to heat it and turn it into steam and let the steam come back up and turn a turbine to generate electricity. And there have been a fair amount of study about lots of tremors being caused by that. It's not the same as fracking, and yet it's similar. You're messing around with the deep layers of rock.
Mm. The U.S. Geological Survey has published findings confirming that processes like, and that's in quotes, fracking could be to blame for, quote, natural disasters. This was something that a lot of people pointed to after the August earthquake. So what is the theory exactly behind the connection between fracking and triggering earthquakes?
Yeah, and that's why I brought up geothermal, because it's sort of similar. In fracking, you have a layer of shale that's deep, typically, a mile or more down below the surface. The layer's horizontal, so you drill vertically down to it, and then you turn 90 degrees and you start drilling horizontally through it. Then you pump water and sand and chemicals down in there to kind of open fractures in that shale, and the gas comes back up the hole. So, we sort of think of the Earth as this massive, solid, single piece of rock that we're standing on, but it's not like that at all. There's fissures through it. There's tension between different layers in the rock. So when you force water down there under pressure, you're altering the stresses, and that's what an earthquake is. There's stress that builds up in rock, and at some point, that stress is released. If we start messing with the pressures and the boundaries, we could trigger those.
In New York, they're also talking about the potential effect on the water supply for hundreds of thousands of people. So it's warnings of potential disaster. Is that mobilizing the public to oppose fracking? I mean, what if we bump this up to fear of a major earthquake? What does that do to the argument?
First of all, there is quite a strong reaction against fracking in New York State. It's even, the Occupy Wall Street movement. There are people down there now opposing fracking who are part of the movement. But drinking water safety is really what people are worried about. I don't think the earthquakes are something that most people feel is an immediate threat to them. But, your water supply is your water supply.
Despite these kind of environmental fears, though, and opposition, unemployment is still soaring. Fracking promises to bring money and jobs into many distressed areas in the United States. So after looking at this for more than a year, what do you read in the tea leaves for the future of fracking?
Yeah, you're right. Cheaper electricity is sort of a temptation, but the promise of jobs from the industry is probably the biggest factor that would have people in favor of it. And that, you know, the industry makes the argument, hey, we could bring thousands and thousands of jobs to New York State, and certain politicians are really sensitive to that right now.
Well, we'll be sure to follow the story as it continues to develop. And Mark, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure, thank you.
Mark Fischetti, senior editor at Scientific American Magazine. He oversees coverage of energy sustainability in the environment. And we will have links to his article and also the article I mentioned by Chris Mooney that shows a detailed explanation of fracking. Multiply 144 characters by the number of people using Twitter worldwide, and you have a dizzying pool of digital information. Now add other social media posts, webcams the world over, streaming information in real time, assorted other digital ingredients. It's just a lot of data. A research arm of the U.S. intelligence community is now looking to gather and translate that floating information to predict political upheavals, conflicts, epidemics, and other global unknowns. Sharon Weinberger is a Carnegie Fellow at Northwestern University's Medell School of Journalism. She wrote about the project for Nature magazine. Sharon, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we hear political upheavals, you know, I think Arab Spring, especially of Egypt, where protesters, as we know, organized and reported using the social media tools available to them. Is it safe for us to say that the Arab Spring caught U.S. intelligence by surprise?
You know, it depends who you ask. I think that was certainly the feeling from politicians. So I think anytime these sorts of large events happen, there's this idea that there's a failure of prediction and what can we do to make it better?
Hence this project. Unpack for us what it involves. Who's guiding it? What is it going to monitor?
What we have in the modern world is tremendous, you know, petabytes of data every day. You have social media like Twitter. You have edits on Wikipedia to current events. And then you have information coming in from webcams that are everywhere, traffic cameras. And it's too much information for a person to analyze. Are there ways that we can sort of trawl through all this data and come up with indicators, and hence the project's name, Open Source Indicators, of a major event that's about to happen, like the riots at, you know, the student riots at Penn State. And so that's the idea. You know, can you come up with computer algorithms, some sort of automated way of going through this data and predicting what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, or whatever the time period is?
And that methodology is already being used in other fields, a lot about consumer behavior, for example. Is there proven success in predicting any of these outbreaks or predicting the market?
So one of the common examples that's given is movies, box office successes. There are a lot of researchers now saying that we can, with, you know, perhaps 90% accuracy, track social media to predict whether the latest George Clooney movie is going to be a success or a flop. And they're claiming very, very high prediction rates with that. There's other examples, you know, the way Amazon takes example of consumer buyer data. People are applying these models to the stock market. Disease outbreaks is another big one. You know, there's Google collaborating with others on, you know, whether people, you know, Googling flu or cold can help predict outbreaks.
All right, we have just a minute left, but I have to ask, what if totalitarian regimes were able to do the same thing? Could they stamp out unrest before it occurs?
In essence, some of what this is about is influencing behavior. This gives a tool for government, in this case, the U.S. government, to help both predict and possibly influence events. And yes, if you can do it in one country, presumably you can do it in another.
Well, Sharon, I really want to thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sharon Weinberger, a Carnegie Fellow at Northwestern University's Medell School of Journalism. Her article about a U.S. spy agency using Twitter to forecast unrest appeared in Nature. And you'll find a link to it at wordofmouthradio.org. We're going to be back in just a minute with Life After Jobs. We'll be talking about Apple's next move, and we'll also be speaking with Siri. That's the desk assistant now included on the 4S iPhone. That's when Word of Mouth returns on NHPR.